for people to discuss important issues, and that there aren't very many places that you can do that anymore, and that it becomes Focus after a while becomes a kind of a community of friends. It's a very unusual kind of thing. It doesn't exist very much in society anymore. That's one of the reasons that I like it. And many people tell me that they like it. If you are one of those folks who appreciate Focus, you can help us out this morning by giving us a call and making a pledge of support to this radio station. Now, we're going to give you the telephone number in a second. I also want to introduce to you Paula Gray, who is in Pledge Central, the place where our volunteers are standing by the telephones. And we want to tell you about a special thing that we have for you that we've made up just for this pledge period as a way of showing our thanks and also sharing a little cooking information with you. Paula?
That's right. Good morning, David, and good morning, Doyle. And we've got a very special gift and also a very appropriate thank you gift this morning for everyone who calls in with a pledge of $35 or more to 217-244-9455 during Focus 580 this morning. You will receive a packet of favorite holiday recipes from the staffs of National Public Radio, WILL AM 580 and WILL FM 90.9. And there are some wonderful recipes here, let me tell you. You can get Scott Simon's spaghetti, Susan Stamberg's cranberry relish, so NPR stars like that. And then we have our own local stars. Station manager Dan Simeone has a recipe that looks really marvelous in here for biscotti, which are Italian Christmas cookies. And our own David Inch has his recipe in here as well. I believe it's something called nutted wild rice. Is that right, David?
That's right. It's very good. I won't claim to have invented it, but it is a good recipe, and I think people would enjoy it. That's in there, too. There are quite a few, and they're printed up on fairly good cardstock. And if you have a recipe card file, you can put them in there. And we would like you to have one of these sets of cards, but you just have to do one thing for us, and it's not too tough. That is to pick up the telephone and make a pledge. Give us a call and make a pledge of $35 or more, and with our thanks, we'll send you some of these cards. Well, I tell you what, Paula, why don't we spend some time here talking with Doyle, and then we will talk with you again a little bit later.
Sounds great to me.
This morning, the man we have with us is our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore. He's an art professor at the U of I, and for a while now, he's been joining us and talking about cooking. So good to have you with us once again.
Thank you very much.
Before we get started, I would like folks to know that today's broadcast of Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from The Great Impasta, centrally located on Church Street in downtown Champaign. The Great Impasta specializes in northern Italian cuisines, domestic and imported wines, fine desserts, and freshly baked breads and croissants. How are you feeling today?
Pretty good.
Good, very good. Are you starting to think about the holidays? I just realized that, well, November 1st is like in a week.
That's right.
And Thanksgiving will be here.
That's more than you know. Well, yes, I got my first invitation to a Thanksgiving Day dinner. I don't know if I'm going yet or not, but yes, the holidays indeed are up on us. We haven't even had Halloween yet.
Well, one of the things that I think about is it's interesting that you know, if you ask people whether they have special holiday recipes, I think a lot of people will say that they do. And the other interesting thing is then if you ask them, do you ever make this any other time of the year? And in many cases, people will say no. And that's strange. I guess that's part of the holiday ritual, I guess, that you have something that you do just maybe a couple of times a year.
Yeah. Yeah, well, because they're associated with certain times or certain gatherings, and or maybe their favorite foods of members of the family. I have, certainly in my family, there's a food or two that is unique only because that's the time everyone is home, you know, during certain holidays. And besides that, it was made of Jell-O, and you got to have the winter, or it wouldn't have set up. So I suppose that's some of the reasons. Most of it is just association. We make these traditions in our own families, and they sometimes extend beyond. We got a good time to extend them beyond today. These folks who have added some of their own private recipes and given us these cards. It's pretty, very good.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can talk about some of these things, and also as always, I'm hoping that some of the folks who are listening maybe will have recipes they would like to share with us.
Get them started to thinking about the holidays anyway, and they'll come up with some recipes
right.
that they have to dig out and think about for a while. Yeah.
Or also, you know, sometimes in the past we've had people who just have cooking questions. They would like you to do a little kitchen troubleshooting. That's fine.
We can do
you know,
that.
Whatever
too.
Is on people's minds, if they would like to call up and talk with us. The number, as always, is 333-9455. We have a toll-free line also. Now, that first number is the Champaign or Urbana number. We also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear the radio station. That is 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. There's some interesting recipes in here I've been looking through. I never would have thought that our staff here had such culinary skills.
You've got creative people here, of course, and they all cook, yeah.
Here's a Roger Cooper recipe. I have to ask you about this. This is apparently famous because Roger has been making it for a long time. This is Roger's recipe for chicken with 40 cloves of garlic.
Count them.
Now, it says here that you do have to have 40 cloves of garlic unpeeled. It's very specific. It says 40. You really mean
40?
40.
40, yes. That would be probably close to about 8 heads, you know, 8 whole huge garlic heads. And that's not too many.
Mm-hmm. And then
it's something you probably don't know, but when you cook with garlic, all of that harshness or that raw garlic flavor or smell or whatever comes to you when you first think of garlic, it becomes milder and milder. And then these being unpeeled, then all of that softens up and stays inside the peeling. Mm-hmm. And then what you do is that you have these wonderful heads of garlic, and you take them and squeeze them on a piece of bread, and you eat it like a little spread, and it is heavenly.
Yeah. Now, see, I like garlic and do use it with cooking. This is just one thing that I have never made. And, you know, every time when you hear the name of this dish, it almost sounds like it ought to be a joke.
Chicken
with 40 cloves of garlic, but it really... You really do use all that.
It's really true, and I have indeed eaten this recipe of Roger's. It's very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
In Provence, the garlic is sometimes simply roasted with a little bit of olive oil on it. You just trim off the tops and put them in a little pan with their little heads up, sprinkle a little bit of olive oil on it, and roast them. And pretty much the same thing. Then they're taken and squirted on bread. That's the part that amazes me, is that it has become a soft mush, and it's just sort of a little tube of garlic that you squirt on the bread, but you eat them all up. They're very, very good, and that's what this is related to. It's a recipe that's related to Provence.
Just one of the recipes that you can get with this little packet that we're offering to send out to you. Something else we have a caller. I was just going to say something that people might not realize is that all garlics are not alike. I just recently got some that was grown by a neighbor that was really wonderful, I thought, and it was mild and almost had a nutty kind of a flavor to it, and it's really wonderful. So maybe people's reactions to garlic might depend on what kind of garlic it
is. The new elephant garlic, the one that's become recently available, is a milder garlic.
There's the bigger, real huge.
It's huge ones. And bigger. Mm-hmm.
We do have a caller here.
Yes,
let's talk to them here on our toll-free line. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Fine.
You have something you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, I was interested in the garlic, and that's one of the things I make at a holiday time, but I make the old-fashioned aioli and sauce.
Oh, my, yes. When do you have that? Do you have that as a special meal?
No, I keep it for holidays. And I look around and find the best French or Italian bread I can buy.
Oh, yes.
Or make. Sometimes I make the cold water type of French bread.
Uh-huh.
It's much saltier, though, so.
Now, how much garlic do you put in the aioli sauce?
Well, your 40 cloves is just about it.
It's just about right, isn't it?
My recipe calls for a pound of butter, but since butter is so expensive and I can't stand the thought of margarine, I use two slices of butter, Mm-hmm. And it says it won't work if you don't clarify it, and that's not true. It may be taste better if you clarify it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in a hurry like I am sometimes, and closer holidays become, the busier I seem to get.
Now,
I simply melt it real good.
Is this the aioli sauce that you're describing?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm interested in that.
Well, as you know, garlic scorches very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I did it what they said, and I had scorched garlic.
Mm.
And had to throw the whole thing out and start over again. And my feeling is, start it in a very heavy skillet.
Yes.
But as the heads begin to become transparent, switch it to double boiler.
Oh, okay.
And finish
so
it off.
And
it
so you cut the heat down, yes.
It won't scorch, and you can keep it. It'll take longer.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, you'll wind up with a small one of those little bitty measures.
Mm-hmm.
To get it to the consistent spreadable.
So then this is cloves and butter that you are putting together.
I had not heard of what you were talking about.
No, that's one with the chicken. But now, tell me what you do with this butter and a garlic mixture.
Well,
what do you do? Because this is a different sauce than I know.
Oh, well, I've got two. One is a French recipe that came from a French chef, and he says to lightly brown or let it turn somewhat dark.
Mm-hmm.
The other one says, no, don't let it turn dark.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't want it to turn dark, and they seem to like it here better if it's not turned dark, that's where you go to the...
What do you do with it? I've never run into this sauce. What do you do with the sauce?
I put it in a jar, put it in the refrigerator, and then you make garlic toast.
I see.
Garlic bread, garlic toast, add some parsley if you want.
Mm-hmm. I see. That's the way it's used.
A little bit
all
of dill. If you like dill, add some dill. And bring it to room temperature. Spread, split your loaves and spread them. Freeze them if you want to.
Mm-hmm. I see. I was thinking when you said aioli sauce that this was the one that's made like a mayonnaise with a lot of garlic added to it, which is one of my favorite things to
do.
Well,
you can. The problem is I've never had the patience to make good mayonnaise.
Oh, it's easy. It is so easy.
It's easy.
First, you have to go to Provence and get a marble mortar and pestle. You must have that, and you mash the garlic. That's the main secret.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, one of Walter Drake's catalogs has the marble.
But it has to be
standing there and dripping that blasted oil in a drop at a time.
Oh, I don't put it in a drop at a time. I put it in a thin stream. Sure, I don't. I once made mayonnaise dropping it in a drop at a time, and it took so long, and I gave up. I said it's got to be easier than this, and I quit. So I put it in a thin stream at a time, and then when I use the Cuisinart, I put it in even faster. Cuisinart will make a mayonnaise very, very fast and easy for you. But the one with aioli sauce, there's a very nice flavor that develops with that. And then the mayonnaise, then you eat that with various vegetables that have been lightly boiled and some meats that have been cooked, some very codfish.
Well, I tell you what you can do.
And
if
lamb.
You're going to have a beef roast for Christmas,
mm-hmm.
take a little bit of prepared mustard, Dijon, my preference.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like it, use something else. Use what you want, really. And add a little bit of this to it and taste it as you go. And while the roast is baking, baste it.
The beef roast, yes.
Yeah, with this. You can do the same with chicken if you're putting it on the grill. I don't know about turkey. I've not tried that. But I would suppose it would work okay.
Mm-hmm.
Once the turkey begins to brown, brush a little bit of it on here and there.
Well, that's good. Well, thank you for this recipe. The butter and cloves of garlic, and then it's heated up. That would be very good. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, I've got a couple more. If you haven't got the time,
sure.
Okay. I make this only once a year, mainly because of the seasonal thing of it, and it's as simple as falling off a log. All you have to do is have acorn squash. You split them and clean them out.
Mm, yes.
And turn them upside down and bake them at 450 for 45 minutes. They'll be somewhat soft. Turn them up, and I put brown sugar or maple syrup, or both if you want, and butter. run them back under the broiler until it's all melted.
That is good, isn't it?
It's wonderful.
Oh. So, see, the secret there, then, is to cook the squash first and then put the stuff on top of it and let that, then you cook it again.
Well, we just put, I think I used a tablespoon of butter, depending on how size. If you got the real small ones, cut the butter back. But I get the nice-sized ones. They weigh about a pound, pound and a half
piece. I have one at home right now. I've been wanting to do exactly that to it. And that's good. That's very special for autumn. I love it.
And, of course, I think everybody knows about baked sweet potatoes, and I've done just about everything you can think of to bake sweet potatoes, including pineapple, apple, oranges, bananas, you name it, in a combination. And last year I tried apples and cranberries together.
With the sweet potatoes, or you mean another dish?
No.
Oh.
With the sweet potatoes.
Uh-huh.
But my husband thought it was too tart, so and he cannot have it.
Well, I'll tell you what you do with those sweet potatoes. Let's take a cup of soy sauce and a cup of sugar and a cup of water and boil them up. Try that.
Well,
try that this year.
The problem is he's borderline diabetic, so we don't use much sugar. Be more like fructose or syrup of some kind.
Well, you can
fructose syrup would probably work.
Yeah, the main thing and then some ground ginger. But the ginger and the soy sauce flavor with sweet potatoes is quite wonderful.
Yeah,
try give that a try.
And pound cakes. Pound cakes is something I only make once a year. That's at Christmas time.
Do you know why a pound cake is called a pound cake?
Yeah. Sounds crazy, but
tell us.
Mainly because you measure out a pound of flour, a pound of butter, a pound of sugar, a pound of eggs, that sort of thing.
Isn't that that always has made me amuse. I always like that. I like it that people know that.
Well, I thank you for the call. I always hate to cut in on a good conversation, but I've got some other callers here, and I'd like to go on and include them as well, and just invite everybody who's listening if you would like to call in. This is something that we do regularly on the show here. We talk about cooking, and we encourage folks to call in with their cooking stories or their cooking problems or their recipes they might like to share with us. And we thought, as we were approaching the holiday season, at least for some folks, you might want to share some special holiday recipes with us. And once again, we do have a little packet of recipe cards. These are recipes from some folks here around the radio station and also some people at NPR. And this is our regular fall pledge period. We're asking people to make a pledge of support to the station. And if you'll do that this morning, we'll send you out a set of these cards so you can have these recipes for your very own. We have, someone else to talk with here. And also, if you'd like to call in and talk with us and our guest, Doyle Moore, you can give us a call. The number here is 333-9455. And there's that toll-free line that's 800-222-9455. Well, here's a caller on line number one.
Good.
Hello.
Hi. This is a recipe that I love listening to talk about the garlic. It sounds so wonderful, but this is a little different. It's something that you could certainly use any time of the year, but I particularly associate it with Thanksgiving and Christmas because that's when my parents made it the most.
Yes.
It's a tomato aspic.
Oh.
A gelled tomato aspic. Shall I just read the recipe?
Oh, yes, please. Okay. Yes, that's quite a holiday treat.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. I don't know why I don't make it a little more often, but just particularly associate it with the holidays. It's 4 cups of tomato juice, and one of the things that makes it, the way my dad makes it special, is he uses half of that as Snappy Tom.
Oh, yes, I see.
Which has a little more zip to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever tried it with V8, but that might also work. But the 4 cups of tomato juice, salt and pepper, basil, fresh if you've got it, and half a lemon's worth of juice.
Lemon,
You soften 2 packages of gelatin in a half a cup of the tomato juice. And, let's see, heat the other 3.5 cups to near boiling. Dissolve the gelatin in the hot juice.
Right.
Cool that till it's partially gelled just enough to stir in some vegetables. And he usually adds celery, green pepper, and onion, just chopped up real fine, about 1.5 cups total. I think I have a tendency to put too much in myself, like all those vegetables. But
it gets so good, you want to put a lot more in.
Yeah,
celery and green pepper and onion.
And, yes. Right. And he has also occasionally used artichoke hearts and avocado pieces, but it's the celery and the green pepper.
The crunchy
and the nice
ones,
crunchies, right.
Mm-hmm.
And you just stir that in and chill it till it's good and solid and serve it on some lettuce. And it's wonderful. It's just wonderful.
That is... one of our more recent traditions for Thanksgiving time is the tomato aspic. That was very popular. Oh, I'm trying to remember when tomato aspic became a real popular item. We were talking about that just the other day. But believe it or not, there was a time that we didn't have tomato aspic.
That's sad.
Isn't it, though? But it has only been in the last 30 or 40 years that was a very popular treat. I think it was from the 30s that the tomato aspic.
That makes sense, because
uh-huh.
that would have been when my father was a young teenager.
Oh, yes.
And I'm sure that this recipe is probably something that he got from his mother and from his grandmother. And I imagine that something that was in a magazine when he was
has become a stock favorite now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's good.
But we've had it at Thanksgiving and Christmas for as long as I can remember, and I've grew up disliking it intensely, of course, because I didn't like all those spices and tomato, and somewhere along in uh-huh. high school it just clicked in, and I've absolutely loved it ever
uh-huh.
since.
Uh-huh.
So I wanted to share that.
If you want to do a little bit of changing, put a little bit of Tabasco sauce in it.
Oh, well, I didn't add that, but he usually does.
Yeah, you put a little Tabasco sauce and maybe even Worcestershire.
I think that usually he does not add the Tabasco when he's using the Snappy Tom, because Snappy Tom is fairly warm already.
It's pretty warm already,
isn't it? But if he just uses the plain tomato juice, he does usually add Tabasco and a little Worcestershire.
Yeah, that's what it'll take. And then there's a new sauce, Pick-A-Pepper. There's a pick-a-pepper sauce that's awfully good, and it's a little thicker, but it has a nice flavor to it. And then you might even put in some horseradish. It makes it quite
mm-hmm.
spicy.
I think he's probably done that before. I don't really recall it. But
actually, it sounds like a very thick Bloody Mary when you get done, doesn't
right.
it?
That's right.
Well, thank you very, very much.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's
I appreciate
good
it.
Good show.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This morning, we're talking with Doyle Moore. He's the man we like to call our chef in residence, who comes with us and talks about cooking every month on the show. We have several callers here. Want to talk to some more folks?
Let's do.
Okay, we'll go to line number two for our next person. Hello.
Hi. I wanted to comment about the winter squash and also offer another recipe.
Yes.
One of the things that I do to cut down on my total fat consumption is I put some frozen juice concentrate in the squash instead of the butter and brown sugar.
Oh, which one? Maybe apple or what?
Well, it depends on what I have.
What you have, uh-huh.
For.
That's a very good idea, because that takes care of the sugar and a lot of the flavoring as well, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. And it provides the moisture that the butter does.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the fat content. And I haven't checked, but I would presume that some of the calories are reduced somewhat.
Oh, that's a very good idea.
And Dole has some interesting fruit concentrates now that are mixtures of all kinds of wild things.
Of different ones. And they're frozen, aren't they, in the frozen? Yes, I've just seen them.
Yeah, and you can decide how much you want of a particular kind. I just scoop some of it out and let it defrost right there in the hot squash.
Now, do you put that in right away with the squash, or do you bake the squash first like the other caller did?
Bake the squash first.
Bake it first, uh-huh.
I don't know what the baking would do to the juices, I would imagine they might not
dry them up, I would guess.
Not be
mm-hmm,
strong. The other is a Christmas stolen. My mother ran across this recipe, and when she found a used copy of the New York Times International Cookbook.
Oh, yes.
Found a used copy in the Jane Addams bookstore the other day, and she was leaping through it and discovered a recipe from the baker who used to, she remembers him as a child, this delivery van, horse-drawn, parking on the hill in New Jersey in front of my grandmother's house, and my grandmother getting upset because the horse was parked on the hill.
And so she found a recipe by this baker.
Yeah, for mm-hmm. the stolen that my grandmother used to buy from him.
Oh, well.
And it was Dugan's Bakery of North Caldwell, and he's supposed to be the premier stolen baker.
Oh, that's good.
And I like the stolen because it's not as sweet as a lot of cookies are. It's sort of a mixture of bread and sweets, so again, you don't have this overload of calories. I have a difficult time as Thanksgiving and Christmas roll around because there's parties and entertaining, and of course you bake cookies and you sit around and you talk and you eat and you gain weight.
Isn't that true? Well, you want to do that, and at the same time you don't want to do that, but we fight it anyway. Well, can you give us the recipe for the stolen, please?
It's 2/3 of a cup of milk, 2/3 of a cup of sugar, 3/4 teaspoon of salt.
3/4 of a teaspoon of salt, yes.
It says 1/2 cup of butter and 2 tablespoons of vegetable shortening. I just use margarine. And you warm that to the point where the butter melts.
It just melted,
gets dissolved. And then 2 packages of active dry yeast and 1/4 cup of warm water. And you soften the yeast in the water.
Right. 2 packages of yeast and 1/4 of a cup of water.
With a new fast yeast, which I haven't tried, and you might be able to vary that. 2 eggs.
Whole eggs.
Yeah. Although I often use egg beaters now, again, to cut down on fat.
They're good. And there's another product that I like. It's called Second Nature. And it's the same thing. It's an egg substitute, but it's awfully good.
And sometimes I use 2 egg whites to substitute for one of the eggs in some recipes. I haven't tried it with this particular one. 1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon.
1/2 a teaspoon of cinnamon.
1/8 of a teaspoon of ground mace.
Now, do you really put 1/8 of a teaspoon in? That always makes me laugh. I measured one out once. I said, you've got to be kidding.
Oh, I don't worry about these things too much. That's from the recipe. And I'm not even sure I have mace. If you don't use things very often, by the time you get around to using a significant amount, it doesn't have any much flavor in it.
Yes.
1/8 of a teaspoon of ground cardamom.
And cardamom, yes.
I really like cardamom. It really smells so nice. And about 3 1/2 cups of all-purpose flour, and that is an approximate measurement. And you beat all of that in to the yeast and the other liquid that you have, until you get a dough that you can, it's a soft dough that you can knead.
Now, you see, that doesn't have very much sugar in it. That's only 2/3 of a cup of sugar, and if you were trying to watch that, you could cut that back or even use one of the new sugar substitutes that you can bake with.
And it doesn't have much in the way of butter, and
no.
It's a big recipe.
Oh, that's very good. Now, how do you bake that?
Well, you treat it like most breads. You would knead it until it was smooth, and then you knead in a cup of candied fruits and 1/4 of a cup of raisins.
Okay, 1/4 of a cup of raisins and candied fruit.
And you knead the fruit into the dough after you toss the fruits in with some flour, and that helps them keep them from flopping down and descending, getting to the bottom of the dough when you bake it. And then you let it rise until about doubled in a greased bowl and covered. And then you punch it down and roll it out into an oval. And then you fold it over after you rolled it out so that you end up with a semicircle. And you don't make the...
Like a wreath, you mean?
No, it's going to... You roll it into an oval.
Oh, roll it into an oval, and then fold it over and make a a half moon.
Right.
Yes.
And then you bake it in the oven. Oh, I'm sorry, you let it rise again until about doubled. That takes about 1 1/2 or 2 hours. And then you bake it in the oven, a 400-degree oven for 10 minutes.
400 degrees for 10 minutes, yes.
And then you bake it at 350 for 25 minutes or so.
Yes, 400 degrees for 10 minutes and then 350 for 25, and it ought to be just about right.
Yeah, and then can brush it with a little bit of butter and as it comes out, and then you can put a very, very light frosting on it if you'd like a little more sugar, and you can vary that.
Well, wasn't that a great surprise to find that recipe?
Yeah, it was fun, especially hearing the story about my grandmother getting upset about it. I can see why she would. The poor horse had to stand there while he apparently he had a friend that he liked to talk to on the street.
Oh, my. Oh, well, that's good. Well, thank you for that recipe. I appreciate that. That's fun. Be sure to call back and give a pledge.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. We have, I was going to say we have about 10 minutes left, and actually we have about 10 minutes left
in the
first
started.
Part of Focus, but Doyle's going to spend both hours with us this morning, so you'll get plenty of Doyle on this morning's program. Let's just go on, and we'll talk with somebody else. We have a caller here on line number 3.
Hello.
Hi. Hello there.
Hi. I just have a question. I have no recipe to add, but I need some help because I'm trying to... think of what to prepare for some 4- and 5-year-olds for a treat, and I'd like to. It's for a Halloween celebration, and I kind of would like to use a pumpkin filling and not make a pumpkin pie so much, but maybe a bar kind of cookie. And I haven't found yet a recipe that would be suitable for finger food like that. And I was wondering if you or one of the listeners would have a suggestion for mixing up a. Something for.
I'm trying to think right now. My sister makes a pumpkin tort of some sort that we end up eating with our fingers. It's really like eating a piece of pie. Uh-huh. But it's only made with. I think there's whipped cream on top of it or something.
Oh,
she must put whipped cream. I don't think that'd be good for 4 or 5 year olds. Her 20-year-old children always demand it at this particular time of the year.
Well, that sounds delicious.
I'll bet there would be a fruit bar or something that would be good with pumpkin on that.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was just
in between
thinking of substituting, in some other recipes. But I thought that
look for one that uses applesauce, applesauce fruit bar, and then substitute a nice spicy mixture of pumpkin. I bet that would work. Because those would be about the same moisture and about the same thickness.
Uh-huh.
I bet that'd be pretty tasty.
And what kind of spice? You're talking about putting a few spices in the filling.
Oh, I would put cinnamon and cloves and I even ground allspice and make it nice and spicy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks.
I bet that would work.
And maybe if you can, keep listening because there might be somebody who has a recipe that they'll... they'll share with us.
I'll do that. I was planning on listening to see if there was others.
A pumpkin fruit bar. We'll send out a call for a pumpkin fruit bar.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
Bye.
We have somebody else standing by here on line number 1. We'll dash right over there. Hmm? Hello.
Hello. Yes, I was calling respect to the woman who was talking about the mayonnaise, and she had said it takes so long drop by drop.
Yes.
And I don't have a food processor. I just have a mixer. But I found using a meat baster and just suck the oil up into that and
it a lot easier. I hadn't thought of that. That would work quite well, wouldn't it? And then you use the hand mixer?
The machine mixer. And that works pretty good. And I was also going to say you had suggested pick a pepper sauce.
Yeah, yes.
And I've only found it one store here. I guess it was Jewel. But I really like it. Just instead of using barbecue sauce on chicken, like for when you grill chicken or something like that.
It has a lot of wide uses. I guess the reason I'm thinking about it is that I just bought a new one last week and carried it away on the weekend, and I had it with me, and you use it. Anytime you turn around and look like you need one of sauce, So it is good for barbecue, and it's good for sort of spicing up things. Pick a pepper.
Yeah, and I find that when you use it like on a barbecue, even though just out of the bottle, it's really kind of spicy.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get it on the meat and it grills and that, it mellows out a lot.
Well, you'll find that a lot of hot things like that do mellow when they're cooking. We don't think that they're going to, and they say, oh, this is just awful. And that's why I just load up my chili with a lot of hot pepper. There's never enough by the time I've cooked it out, Not for my taste, anyway.
Yeah.
So that's good. Well, I'm glad you used that.
Great. Well, thank you for the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye. Is there a particular kind of pepper that you like to use? I mean, a particular variety? Or how do you... How do you do that? You use fresh peppers or dried peppers or pepper sauce?
You mean for hot or what?
Yeah. Well, like if you were making chili.
Oh, that's a hard one. We were talking. Now we're going to get back onto chili, aren't we?
I was so happy that a
listener called in and straightened me out on me trying to make my mother's chili, because I have done it since then, and I've just been blessed every time that we have done that. However, what I could not find was the chili powder that had the taste that I remembered. I did finally find it. You have to buy that little brown paper bag of Shelby's, and that is the right taste. All the other things that I've tasted, they've changed. Something's changed, but I have relocated the right taste. So in answer to your question, if I were making chili, I would use that Shelby mixture that comes in a paper bag.
Yeah.
But it's become hard to find, and I'm going to trudge off today and look for it. That was one of my things to do after the program, was hunt up where I can find that, because it's been dropped out of a couple of stores, and I think I know where it is. I'm going to try to find it. But I like it for that. If I'm using, if I just want hot pepper, I like to use a mixture that you find in the Asian food store for just regular flaked hot pepper. I like that very much. There's a nice sense to it. I have no idea why it is different. I put that in soups and things like that that you would probably think you were doing a kind of a Cajun hot pepper. Well, I like this Asian style. I bought it at Amco some time ago, and it has a slightly different, nice smell to it. And then if I'm using fresh peppers, then you choose whichever one generally the recipe would call jalapeno. Some people are allergic to jalapeno peppers, and they aren't to others. There's now a habanero pepper. Don't bite into a habanero, no matter what happens.
It's really hot.
It is really hot. I'm wondering if it is closely related to the bony pepper, because it turns yellow like a bony pepper, which is a very, very hot sauce. Bony or bonny, I'm not sure. But it's called a habanero. It's very, very hot, and we can buy them here in this town. So for fresh peppers, you kind of have to watch it. You kind of get some local advice from whoever is dealing with that. But the dried peppers, you can start putting in a little bit, a little bit more, a little bit more. I don't know what the pepper that the Italian pepper, the flaked pepper you get to put on the pizza, that's also a different pepper.
Mm.
I know that. And then the one that's very, very popular is that little big, the New Mexico pepper. I forget its name. There's one called Big Jim. That's a new hybrid, I think, that the New Mexico. And then the Anaheim pepper is one that's a good hot one. So you sort of pick those up as you're wandering around. Stay away from those little teeny-weeny hot ones, though. They're killers.
Okay.
And don't pretend that your little favorite pepper bush that somebody has given you as a present is something to eat either. They are hot.
Mm.
That's too much.
Okay. Well, I was just curious what you thought about peppers. We'll talk with some more folks here. We'll go to line number three next. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Hello there.
For the lady who called in for pumpkin bars.
Oh, yes.
I don't have pumpkin bars. I called in that recipe last month for pumpkin raisin muffins, which she could do in cupcake liners.
Yes, that would be. I remember that recipe. That's what I was sort of thinking about at the time. Yes.
Do you have a copy of that at the station that she could just call in for?
No, not right with me. I have that at home. Why don't you give that again? That was an easy recipe and very, very good.
Okay. It's 1.5 cups all-purpose flour.
Mm-hmm.
1.5 teaspoons baking powder.
Baking powder, yes.
Mm-hmm. 1/4 teaspoon soda, baking soda.
Yes.
1/2 teaspoon salt.
1/2 teaspoon of salt, yes.
1/4 cup sugar.
And 1/4 of a cup of sugar.
Uh-huh. And then 3/4 teaspoon cinnamon.
Right.
1/2 teaspoon ground cloves. And 1/2 a cup of raisins.
And 1/2 a cup of raisins, right.
Now, you're supposed to mix all those in dry ingredients, including the sugar, and then stir in the raisins.
After you have, okay. So that is flour, baking powder, soda, salt, sugar, cinnamon, and cloves. That's all the dry ingredients.
Right.
And then mix in the raisins.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Then you blend together one egg.
Right.
Milk, one half cup milk.
A half cup of milk, yes.
I would use skim milk. A quarter cup of molasses.
That was, yeah.
Yeah, unsulfured, and half a cup of pumpkin. And melted and slightly cooled butter or margarine, one-third cup.
A third of a cup of fat, yes. Or you could use an oil in that, couldn't you?
I imagine you could.
Melted margarine or an oil, yes.
Yeah, because it doesn't seem to depend on it being hard or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not creaming it. Then it says fill grease muffin cups, two-thirds full, you know, the usual thing.
Right.
Bake at 400 degrees for 15 to 20 minutes.
Right.
Now, I imagine if I were doing that for a party, I would double or triple it because that makes 12 large or 14 medium muffins.
Now, that would be very good, and if you wanted to sort of, if these are for children and you've got these little muffin faces, then you could stick some candy corn on for eyes and a mouth and make a jack-o'-lantern or a pumpkin out of them. I bet they'd like that.
Yeah, that's true.
Sure.
Or even raisins.
Or some raisins, yes. And, well, you've got some in there, but stick them on the top. Yeah, make faces out of them. That's good. Well, thank you, because I was thinking of that recipe. I should have even mentioned it, but I'm glad you were listening.
Okay, well, right. But that's not why I called.
Oh, all right, yes.
I have two others. I don't know if we have time. Ooh. I have another recipe for Stollen that's fairly different. I lived in Germany for some time and got this there. This is a made with baking powder. But the interesting thing I found out while I lived there was that they call a whole variety of things Stollen that we don't.
Oh, uh-huh.
When I made Irish soda bread and took it to serve to my friends, they call that Stollen.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I guess because it's slightly sweet.
Uh-huh.
And sort of between a bread and a cake. Do we have time for this?
Well, how are we doing?
We're coming close to the hour, actually. I feel really bad here because we're coming close to the point where we're going to have to stop. Would you want to call back, right, and we'll get you right at the beginning of the next hour,
yeah,
or are you,
I
busy?
Can't next hour.
I'm so sorry.
I've got a shorter cookie recipe.
Well, let's have at it.
Okay, this is a Swiss cookie recipe. It's called Mailänderli.
Mm-hmm.
Which means Mailand is the German word for Milan.
Milano. Oh, yes.
So it would be, a Mailander would be someone who went to Milan, so maybe it was a Swiss
Mailander,
baker.
Mailander, yes.
Okay, 1 3/4 cups flour.
1 3/4 cups flour.
1 1/4 cups sugar.
1 1/4 cups of sugar, yes.
3 ounces of butter, that would be 3/4 of a stick.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, first you let the butter soften.
Right.
Then you cream the butter, add the sugar, beat, add the eggs, and beat until it's fluffy.
Right.
Then you add the flour slowly, and you're going to have to end up mixing it by hand, and add enough so that you can really knead it and roll it out.
So you then roll it out, yes.
Yeah, without it sticking to the, rolling pin.
Mm-hmm.
And you roll them out about... Oh, not quite a quarter inch thick, maybe 3/16,
mm-hmm.
somewhere like that. And cut them into shapes, lay them on the cookie sheet, and brush them with beaten egg. I think originally we brushed them with beaten egg yolk, but I usually use the whole egg just because...
And a little water.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that gives them a kind of, makes them kind of glisten.
Glazes them, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they don't turn, they turn kind of a light golden brown, and they are very hard.
Now, what's the temperature?
It's a little slow, maybe about 300.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have how long, because, of course, all these old cookbooks don't tell you.
Exactly, you sort of watch it. Mm-hmm. And that is slow, and they would dry out, and they'd be nice and hard and crisp.
Yeah, and then we always hung them on the tree.
Oh.
And they'll keep all through the Christmas season. In my family, we always had a horse and a man for each kid.
Oh.
And we, eyed them all the time they were on the tree.
Waiting to get to eat them.
Right.
When did you eat them?
When,
yeah. If they were on the tree. When you took the tree down?
Yeah. Yeah. We always had some others. We always got to eat the ones that were the weird shapes left over from rolling them out, and and you know, the hearts and the and the other things.
Well, thank you very much for that. We're going to have to go away and do something else, so we'll see you all later.